This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the At the Shock Center podcast. Today we'll be discussing the number one movie in the world, Deadpool number 2, because it was great.
Ooh, it was good. Yeah, I thought you were talking about Solo.
Never heard of it.
Dang,
what's that?
I like Solo. Ronnie, you saw Solo, right?
Yep. Ronnie saw Solo. Solo.
I did. I was the only one in the theater.
Nobody in the theater.
It was awesome.
Oh man.
Well, yeah, of course it was awesome. You were by yourself.
Yeah.
Because nobody else thought it was awesome.
Yeah,
I'm
liked
sure
it.
People loved it. Oh, you saw it too?
Yeah, I saw it.
Oh, you guys should have gone together, and then two people would have seen it.
We probably did. We just didn't know it.
I felt your presence, Ronnie.
Yeah, because with the time differential on everything, see?
I don't know about time. I don't know about time. I live in all times.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like I'm 3 for 3 with going to late movies where old people don't go. And so then
You went at like midnight, right?
Yeah. The last 3 times I went at midnight.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I can't do midnight shows, dude. I'll fall asleep.
That's what happens when you don't like people, see?
True.
So you make up your own time, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'll go to that one. And then nobody else shows up, so you get to be that guy that they're like, dang it, we could have went home, but now we got to start the movie.
See, the last few movies I've gone are 3 or 4 in the afternoon, so that was a pretty good time. It's not very busy. I always get the same seats, so it works out perfect.
Yeah.
Dead set in the middle.
Yep.
Yep.
We're not here to talk about movies.
I don't know about the... Fair enough.
Travis, quit distracting us. We're here to talk Aftershock Comics, and here you go talking about some little movie nobody's ever heard of. I know you're a hipster Hollywood guy. Okay, you get to see all the cool stuff before everybody else. But on this podcast, we talk comic books. And this week, we have three comic books. Never heard of it.
What are we talking about this week?
Worst rated Star Wars movie of all time. This week, we're talking about Brothers Dracul, number 2, Her Infernal Descent, number 2, and Animosity, number 14.
Sounds like a lineup.
Which one do you guys want to talk about first?
It's your show. You pick.
Listen, it's not my show. This is your show. This show was your idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go with Brothers Dracul then.
All right. Brothers Dracul, number 2. This is written by Cullen Bunn with art by Mirko Kolak. Colors by Maria Santaleola with letters by Simon Bolan.
Yeah.
Since you picked it, Ronnie, tell me how you felt about this issue.
Actually, I like this one a lot better than the first one.
Yeah, me too.
For me. Because it seemed like we got the origin type stuff out of the way, and so now we're into the meat of things. We're getting to the meat of things, rather. And one of the brothers was opted to leave, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And Vlad's still there, and still kicking ass and taking names. So I have a question, though.
Yeah.
So the brothers feel that they're just slaves. And the other main guy, their boss, I guess.
Mehmet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He feels like it's that they're privileged to be in that spot because that's the mm-hmm. spot he was in, but they don't see it like that.
Yeah.
So is that like, does he really think that or is it like PR work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was trying to think about that a little bit too because I think in this issue, we learn a lot about the politics of the Ottoman Empire invading this place. Because the, what's his name, Travis? You said Mehmet.
Well, Mehmet is like the Sultan's son. I forgot what the name of like the big bearded guy is.
No, yeah, I'm talking about the Sultan's son. You said Mehmet?
Yeah, like Mehmet or Mehmet or something like that.
Let's call him Charlie. So yeah. Charlie says that at the end of it, and then when the bearded guy, we'll call him Beardo. When Beardo is talking to all the Transylvanian people, he says exactly that, right? Like, you guys aren't slaves. You're in a place of privilege. Like, you should be happy that you were selected to do this task for the Sultan. And I had to think about that because it feels weird, right? Like, I think the way that it comes off, the Ottomans seem to think that they're doing right by these people.
Right.
But the people don't, with good reason, because they were invaded and defeated, right? And the task that they're chosen to do is kind of a crappy task. Like, they're the Sultan's son's bodyguards, basically. And the Sultan's son is a little chicken crap and can't fight these vampires. So it's up to Vlad and his brother to do the fighting, in particular Vlad.
Right.
So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. It almost paints the Ottomans like good people. But if you look back at history, like, they killed a lot of people.
Right.
And I guess, like, ultimately, history is in the side of the winners, but
Travis? Travis?
Travis?
Yo, my connection is really rough right now, so I'm, like, a minute behind. I'm catching up, so sorry. I think I'm current right now, so go on. Sorry.
Well, do you have anything to add to that?
Again, stop me if this has already been covered, but I was pretty interested, I think, by exactly what we were talking about, where basically you've got Beardo, and he's talking about, he's like, you know, why are they doing all this? And they're like, oh, well, they've taken the blood oath. You know, Mehmet's taking the same blood oath that the Sultan took, and that's to get rid of all the vampires or whatever, right? Even though that we did it once and it they just came back the same as before. But they're like, it's a sacred blood oath. But, you know, who's really doing the work? You know, like, the brothers Dracul are doing the work. And I assumedly Beardo did the work before them, you know. But he's like, look, you're doing it like I did it. You know, like, I don't know. I guess he's buying into the, you know, validity of the mission, you know, because I don't know. Vampires, kind of bad news. I can get behind that. There's a real vampire here. It's not just, you know, a facade, you know, for genocide. You know, like, they are killing vampires.
Sure.
So maybe they're, like, he actually believes that is a sacred quest, even though they won't take any of the credit. They're taking all the risk. But, like, he's just, like, I think he's... That's such a part of his own identity that he doesn't have any issues with transposing it on somebody else.
Yeah, and I mean, Beardo is in a place of power, right? So he can say those kind of things, whereas the people they've just conquered can't. What I found interesting, though, is the fact that what do we call him? Charlie. The fact that the Sultan sends Charlie to kill the vampires, knowing damn well that his son's kind of chicken shit.
Yeah, but he's gonna take the boys too, though.
Yeah, but he does. I mean, you have that exchange halfway through the book where they're like, "Well, these kids are all dead. Let's go in and kill the vampires ourselves." And then the kids come out all bloodied.
Right.
So, I mean, did the Sultan know this, or is it Beardo that is the one that, you know, sent them in to do this this ritual? You know, is that part of Charlie becoming the heir to the Sultan? You know, even though it's his son, like, is this part of like a ritual to make him a leader, or is, you know, Beardo sending Charlie in there so that when Charlie gets killed, he can take over the Sultan when the Sultan goes away?
Yeah, that makes sense as a reason for why it needs to be the Sultan or his son or anybody, is, you know, that it's tied to the office or something, that it's a rite of passage. I'll buy that.
What about this guy that pops up at the end? Who's that guy?
I think it's the devil.
Okay, that is the devil incarnate then.
Right. I mean, yeah.
That's what I took it as, too.
Okay, yeah.
It's like the panel before. They're talking about the devil, right?
Yeah.
So what he's doing there, that's anybody's guess, you know? Like, my guess is if they're introducing him like this, he's going to go make a deal to Vlad or something, right?
You would think with what we know of Vlad now.
So I like that theory because I think that would go hand in hand. It would be like a mirror story to the Sultan and Charlie, because now just like Charlie would become the Sultan when the Sultan dies, Vlad would become the devil when the devil dies. Like, he's the heir to the devil,
right?
Based on, you know, his actions in this issue. I think that'd be a nice juxtaposition in the story. Yeah. If that's the way that it turns out.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, well, we know that eventually Vlad's going to become a vampire, right? You know, like just from what we've already seen in the series. He's going to, you know, Radu went away and, you know, became big deal general guy or whatever. And Vlad stayed home and ruled stuff and turned into a giant graveyard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So how we get there, I guess, is the interesting part, you know? Like, you know, whether Radu, I guess, is getting pulled off more on the mission and Vlad falls back, or, you know, something else. I assume it's going that direction.
Yeah, I like it. I want to see what Cullen does with how he ends the story with Vlad. Because, you know, when he did what was the previous one, the King Arthur one?
Unholy Grail.
Unholy Grail. That was an interesting retelling, but I had issues with the story because it didn't quite jive with what I remember from the King Arthur story. I mean, it was a good book, but I think in particular with Vlad being a real person with a lot of mythology around them, I think this type of story could work out a little better than Unholy Grail did, at least for me. Oh, I mean, like I said, I enjoyed Unholy Grail, but I think so far this story works out better for me.
Agreed.
Anything else we want to say about this, or should we move on?
Oh, I just kind of as a final thought. I feel like it looks like to me that they're setting up a romance between Vlad and this girl. I think her name is Ermine.
Yeah.
She's putting water in his bath in this issue. And so I wonder if that is going to kind of be like a plot device for how we get him to like evil vampire villain guy, you know, like if not, I feel like it might muddy the waters of like Nair to be like, also there's a love story, but you know, like that's just a kind of a side attraction to this, you know, more direct historical horror vampire story, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I get your point. I don't know if I agree.
I hope it doesn't go that way.
Oh, really?
I hope it doesn't go the way that something happens to her and that's why he's the evil thing. Because that would be like the typical trope of the love of his life happens, something happens and swings something.
See, I don't know, dude. Like, these medieval stories in particular, romance plays a big part of the story. And I think you have to have that in order to get the full picture. I get what you're saying there, Ronnie. I wouldn't want that because I think it would be a little too cliche.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I mean, he can have the romance and everything. I just don't want it to be the final nail of the reason why he becomes Vlad the Impaler that we know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's pretty emo.
So emo.
He's the OG emo.
All right, Ronnie, give me a rating.
I'm going to go 4 on this one because, like I said, I thought it ramped up from the first issue, and I'm eagerly waiting to see where number 3 takes us.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, dude. 4 out of 5 for me as well. I'm really, really digging it. Really digging it. I want more vampires, though, not just like them. The vampires show up and boom, like head blow up and vampires gone. But yeah, I dig it. I look forward to seeing how the devil shapes the story for the next couple issues. Travis!
Well, yeah, just to that point, I think that, you know, like, we're seeing the like vampires gathered around the devil. So I think there is maybe indications that he's their leader or something, you know, that they're connected narratively. And I will go 4 out of 5 as well. And I'm going to give also big props to the art and especially the coloring, because I really liked a lot of the blood spatter kind of colors in this issue. Like, I thought it really looked great, you know, and it was an effect that got a lot of mileage in different parts.
I agree.
I liked it.
All right, Travis, why don't you pick the next book for us?
You want to go Her Infernal Descent?
All right. Her Infernal Descent number 2, co-written by Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson, with art by Kyle Charles, colors by D. Cuniff, and letters by Ryan Ferrier. So, Travis, what'd you like about this? Or maybe didn't like?
I don't know that there was anything that I didn't like. You know, I think it's... I'm really liking this series so far, and... I think the interesting thing, obviously, is there's a pretty direct connection between this and Dante's Inferno.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, like, I don't claim to be an Inferno expert. You know, I was supposed to read it in high school, and that really didn't happen. But...
shame on you.
Yeah. As far as I understand, like, so far, the rings of hell we've seen really line up in order to the rings in Inferno, correct?
Yeah.
So I'm interested in that, right? Like, Inferno, I guess, like, on some level, you know, there's a lot going on. It was like a chance for Dante to, like, kind of inject commentary into his own direct society, you know, like Italy at the time, you know, address personal grievances of his own with, like, the denizens of hell. And then also the whole thing is kind of like a love story, like an Orpheus story almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, like, that much there is a parallel here, albeit with a family, so I don't know how that will, you know, play, and obviously we had things we discussed last time about what happened to the family and why the main character is so guilty, so I'm very interested, I guess, in how all that is gonna play out, especially through the lens of it being the Inferno.
Yeah, and we definitely don't get any further enlightenment into what actually happened, right? All we know is that they're definitely in this place because a lot of characters have seen them going through the circles of hell. And that's about all we get on that.
Yeah, I think the one thing that maybe I noticed in this issue is I feel like they maybe point to the possibility that they're not all together in the same place.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting development, you know?
Well, I wonder how much of that is true, right? Because Kafka had an odd relationship with his father. And I think some of what you're saying comes directly from Kafka, Judge K, when he's talking in the issue. Because he says something about, like, fathers have, like, a different journey in this place, something like that. And I wonder if maybe he's not telling the whole truth, based on his own biases against his own dad. But that's very possible.
Yeah, there's a lot to speculate about kind of where that's going, I think.
I think one of my favorite things about this issue was that I think it was like a page or two. It was kind of hard to read, but the social media people, the YouTubers, I thought that whole thing was pretty funny.
But that was tied into the gluttons, right?
Yeah, you know? Right. Right.
So it's like social media gluttons or like just media in general gluttons.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing that makes it interesting is when Dante was doing the Inferno, there was none of that. Right. So gluttony would be more like overeating or like overindulging in certain aspects of life. And that's what would make you a glutton. Whereas now gluttony with social media is much different. Like all they do is, I mean, we don't do it too bad on the podcast, right? But like we ask people to subscribe or, you know, review the podcast or whatever else. They particularly target the YouTubers because, you know, every single YouTube video that you watch is like, hey, click like and subscribe, you know, like thumbs up, thumbs down. I liked the little Covfefe thing on here. That was pretty funny as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was interesting because it kind of updates the immortal sins, the mortal sins to like a modern take on it.
Well, I think you could also attach the social media thing to Vanity. So I don't know if they also have a ring in Hell in the Inferno, or if that's, you know, like, I'm vague on what the rings are.
Well, they're still like pretty high up, right? So I think they're like the third ring down. They make a reference to the city of Dis, which is the lower circles of hell. And they reference a couple other things, too. Like when Judge K is talking about like he's not the one making the rules, like his father is, something like that. He's talking about Dis. Right. So Dis is the person that rules the seven circles of hell, which would be like what's the deity? Pluto, I guess it would be, the ruler of the underworld, and his name is Dis, right? And so that's why the city of Dis is like the lower rungs of hell, which is where we're kind of heading towards the second half of the story, because we do see like the sins of the flesh stuff, right? And that's represented by the Marquis de Sade, which I was trying to figure out why it is that his punishment is to be tied up to that machine. Oh. It seems like that's something he would enjoy.
Well, dude, have you ever read The Penal Colony by Kafka?
Yeah.
So that's the machine from The Penal Colony, right?
Okay, yeah. Now that makes sense.
Right? So I think that's more of a callback to that specifically. But I have to say, though, like, I love Kafka in that role. I'm very interested in the idea of him doing that, being he, you know, lived and died in the 20th century. So, like, somehow he not only jumped the line, but now he's, like, he's judging the line. Like, I'm very interested how he jumped into that role.
Yeah, I don't know if that's something that we're going to ever see, though. But that's a valid point, though. And the way that time works here is very weird, right? Because I think like when the Marquis de Sade shows up, he says he's been in line for like 120 days. And of course, like there's no way that time can flow the same as it flows here. Because obviously he's been dead for far longer than 4 months.
Yeah. And how do they even know what a day is in hell? You know, like the whole point is kind of that time ceases to exist, you know, like mm-hmm. So is there just like a clock on the wall that like counts days? And it's just to like stick it to the people that are there, and they're like De Sade is there counting days, and he's like, this is the 120th, you know.
Well, and there's another character that is complaining about them jumping the line because they've been in line for like 14 years, and you know, like their feet, like they can't even stand up anymore because their feet are worn out from standing. So obviously, like there's got to be a reasoning for the order, and maybe like as people pop in, other people are pushed back in line.
Line cutters.
There's a special circle in hell for line cutters. That is the obvious argument that we have here.
Ronnie, do you have any thoughts on the issue?
No, you guys hit it up pretty good.
Cool.
I got one more thought then. Just to throw this out. I mentioned this to you guys earlier, right? So basically where it's going is they're sending this lady to, you know, this other area. It's like a kind of an art gallery for sellout artists.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're going there to pick up a can of soup.
Yeah.
So you guys want to place bets on whether Andy Warhol shows up in the next issue?
I mean, who else would have a can of soup?
Yeah, in an art gallery for... you know, people of questionable artistic credentials.
Yeah. I mean, that painting's got what, 4 cans of soup? So maybe he's the richest man in hell with all his cans of soup. Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting that in order to go to the next level, they need to feed this monster a can of soup. Like it's some mundane, but it means such different things in this crazy place, right? What about the fact that Blake's gone and the new guide is going to be Agatha Christie? I really like that because, like I mentioned in our chat on the first issue, there's a lot of references to Agatha Christie stories.
Yeah, they really set it up nicely, so
yeah.
You know, yeah, maybe there's like a lot more kind of to come in that area.
Yep. Well, and you know, the thing about the appearance of Agatha Christie in that last page had me thinking that none of this is actually happening. Like, maybe she just was going up into the attic and bumped her head and passed out. And, like, this is just the stuff that's popping into her brain as she's going through, you know, the stages of grief or whatever.
I hope it's not that. I hope, you know, like, you walk a fine line as far as, like, the Dallas, like, you were dreaming the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. Thing. Yeah. But it's like, oh, God, what's that Christmas movie? Christmas Carol. With the Ghost of Christmas Past, Ghost of Christmas Present, Ghost of Christmas Future, we're like, it's not really happening, but like it makes a difference in the story because all that stuff is real to the main character.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Christmas Carol, it does really happen, you know. I would argue,
does it? We're not going to talk about Christmas Carol, but I thought it was an interesting comparison because I think in some ways it reminds me of that, right? You have the guide taking the person through these different experiences to try to learn a lesson in the end.
Well, I wonder if it's like to take that idea like even further, like if maybe there might be something from this that like maybe the family didn't even die or something. Like maybe she could go back and save the family. Like she wakes up and the family is alive. They never died in the thing or whatever. So it's more like He-Man the movie. You know?
Oh, Lord, no, we're not going there.
I just went there.
No, great movie. No, definitely not. Great movie when you're like 6. Not great movie when you're 36. All right, let's rate this one up. Travis, give me a score.
I'll go 4.5 out of 5. This will run more smoothly if we're both lubricated Tamos.
Yeah. Another solid showing. It's no secret that I'm a big fan of Zach and Lonnie's work. So 4 out of 5 for me as well. Ronald.
I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah. I figured you wouldn't dig this one as much.
Why? Why would you say that?
I know the type of stories you generally enjoy.
Uh-huh.
And I think this one is a little more than heavy. Yeah.
That's the only thing. I mean, it's kind of like what Watchmen is like when you read it, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Or more like Dante's Inferno when we were in high school.
Which, well, for you, I love Dante's.
Yeah,
Inferno.
Yeah. For me, is what I'm saying. But yeah. Like, it's almost more literature than comic booky, but. I love it. I mean, just because it's a 3 out of 5 doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. The final book we need to discuss. Oh, yes. Continue.
I was just going to say, I think the funnest thing about it for me, and I bet like a lot of the appeal for writing it and creating it was just sticking all these celebrities in there and being like, I'm going to make like Jimi Hendrix say something to Agatha Christie. It's going to happen, you know, like. I feel like that's the appeal of this, is just like grab all these dead celebrities and make them do stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things I like about it. It's like, you know, like building a puzzle, right? You have all these pieces and you want to figure out how to put them together. And right now you don't have all the pieces, so you can't quite get the full puzzle, but, you know, that's where we can go into odd places when we talk about that book. Animosity number 14. This is written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Raphael de la Torre, colors by Rob Schwaggy P. Schwager and D. Cuniff, and letters by Marsha Dillon. So I'll kick this one off. Ronnie, I know you like The Walking Dead. Is it just me, or is Animosity really taking a couple of pages from Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't just me.
Because every place that they go is, like, crazy bad for them.
Well, and I think with this issue, the walled city that we learn about, mm-hmm. and what's the headmistress?
Yes.
Reminded me a lot, maybe not so much Negan. What was the other one? The governor.
Governor, Yeah.
It was a lot like The Governor, right? Where, like, you have this walled city where everything's perfect inside, but there's weird ulterior motives going on.
You know, honestly, it kind of reminded me of the crazy hilltop underground city from the 100, too.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, where everything's...
The mountain.
Yeah, the mountain. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yep. See, you start talking about 100, you're going to get me going, buddy. Are you caught up on that show?
I am caught up on that show. That's, like, one of the few shows that I'm actually caught up on.
Dude, right now, that is the only show that I watch, like, the day or the day after that it comes out.
It is. Dude, watch TV.
This whole thing with the one crew thing, mm-hmm. like, those people are hardcore.
Yeah.
They are hardcore. Travis is like, what are they talking about? Travis, go watch the 100. It's fucking awesome.
And my girl, Octavia.
Dude, she is crazy badass.
Yeah. It took her a while to get there, but she's there. But do you, with my comparison with that, do you see what I'm going with? Like, Travis might not know, but, like... It seems fine and everything's normal and protected and running smoothly, but there's crazy stuff, like odd, weird stuff happening.
Well, it's a charade, right?
Yeah.
Like I think this kind of goes with the point that you were making in Brothers Dracul, where you maybe don't know. Travis, was it you that said something about, like, is it like PR speak kind of?
No, that was me. Yeah.
That was you. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what the city's like, right? Because it's a place where there's no animals, right? The only animal we see is the shaved bear, mm-hmm. which, by the way, you guys, when you get a second, you should go on Google or on DuckDuckGo, my favorite place to go, and you should do an image search for a shaved bear. And it is the creepiest thing you will ever see in your life.
All right.
It looks like a giant dog.
Is, like, that what the
super muscular,
what is the shaved bear, what the teeth are broken?
Yeah, yeah, oh. Yeah, yeah, it's a shaved bear.
I didn't know it was a shaved bear. I just thought it was like a bull mastiff or something like that.
No, it's a shaved bear.
Okay.
It was crazy because I've looked up shaved bear before because it's been like a meme many times. so I've seen that. As a matter of fact, when you first see the bear in this issue, that's like the first image you'll see on an image search.
Okay.
Like that exact post and everything.
All right.
Yeah. So there's no animals in this city, right? It's ruled by the headmistress. It's it used to be, looks like a college town that they've walled off, and they're very pro-human. And Ronnie, I hate to bring in politics into this, but in many ways it reminded me of, like, that kind of alt-right movement.
Yeah, it's definitely alt-right movement.
Yeah, where they're just like, yeah, you know, the alt-right is, the alt-right is like very pro-American, pro-white, and here it's like a very pro-humanity thing, and, you know, do whatever you need to do to continue the human race and screw the animals.
Yes, I got that too, but here it's different than, say, a Walk Through Hell comparison.
Because
we've always had that conversation where it's always okay to do it or get it over because they're animals and it doesn't come off as hardcore as if humans were doing it type thing in the story. Like, yep. With Animal Farm, for example. But yes, it is definitely alt-right.
Well, and that's why I think this book works so well, right? Is that you can tell you can make those political statements without, like, shoving them down somebody's throat. Yeah. Like, whether you agree with them or not is irrelevant, right?
Right.
Because, you know, this argument has been coming up so much lately on this whole Comicsgate thing that's been happening.
Yeah.
Where, like, comics have always been political, right? But the difference is how much of your personal politics you put into your comics, right? So you can go into a comic and say the alt-right is bad, or you can tell a story like this that shows why this kind of thing may not be healthy for society as a whole.
Right.
Right. And that's what's different. And I think that's why you like it, because even though it does have the politics, it's not like in A Walk Through Hell where you had 30 pages of tweets saying, like, let's stop gun control. Like let's have gun control.
Right, yeah. Well, it just didn't, yeah. It could have been about anything.
Absolutely.
The tweets could have been about building the wall or, you know, whatever the hot button topic is of the week.
Sure. Yeah, I think right now it's 1,500 children.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's funny that you mentioned that, because in this city they did build a wall.
Yeah.
But
yeah, dude, I mean, like, just to that point, I got to jump on and say, like, I agree. They, you know, kind of just the whole structure of the series really is a very sophisticated, you know, metaphor for race relations and, you know, racism, slavery is, you know, but it's, you know, it's in a context that I feel is, you know, not super confrontational towards, you know, racists, you know, but like by making it abstract, you can hopefully keep people from being defensive and be like, hopefully nobody's reading all this and being like, you know what? Fuck the animals, you know, like kill them all, you know, right. Which, okay. So to just transition there, like, right. What we're seeing with the walled city, they're straight up fascist. Right. And that's what you're talking about with the PR speech. That's newspeak. And, you know, like what we're seeing with Jesse and the kids is that basically, you know, there's forced breeding happening. So it's like basically a Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, like, you know, you kind of, I think, tie in like almost like an ethnic cleansing thing with respect to like animals. They're like screw the animals, you know, like we don't need them, you know, which I would argue short-sighted. You know, you're going to have trouble in a world without animals where it's just humans and a few plants. Don't think that they thought that through, but then follow that on to the, you know, the analogy. And it's like, yeah, when you isolate yourself as, let's say, the United States and build the wall and you know, like, you know, you can't exist alone.
That's true. And I think that's something that comes up in a lot of, like, speculative sci-fi stories. And that's why I like reading this book, is because it does tackle those subjects, but in a way that I think is approachable from all perspectives.
Yeah. You can have a more serious civil debate about this book than you can if all three of us started talking politics.
Absolutely.
Because one of us, by the end of that, would just hang up on the call. Well, I'm just saying.
You're right.
No matter if we all agreed on the same thing or not. I mean, it would just... And this way, it's... I don't know if it's more healthy or not, but you can openly, civilly talk about it more one way or the other.
You're right. And I mean, that's kind of expressed in us as well, right? Like, I think I don't want to, you know, point you guys out, but I think, Travis, you're probably the most left-leaning out of all of us. Ronnie, you're more conservative out of all of us. And I fall somewhere in the middle. And yet we can talk about this book in a civilized fashion and understand what it is that it's trying to do. And I think that's why we all really end up enjoying this book in many respects, is because we can appreciate the way that Marguerite is telling the story.
Yep.
Right. Because, I mean, we're doing this podcast because we love comics.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right. And personal viewpoints are irrelevant when you're talking comics. Right. If you have a great writer telling a great story, then it's still a great writer telling a great story. And it doesn't matter what the story is.
But I have to say that I think one of the things that really strong about this series is that it can be so political and you know, like, philosophical, I guess, and yet, like, be approachable, you know, like, I would say probably not, like, it political in a way that seems to turn people off.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Tough
like,
to do.
Like the argument we had with the Walk Through Hell last week.
Yep. Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens.
Yep.
Marguerite needs to write more books. That's all I know.
Yes. She can write another one since Batwoman's being canceled.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I mean, she's already got two animosities, so why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah, this is really interesting. What'd you guys think about Kyle? I thought when the revelation came about, when they get to the walled city, I was like, huh, there you go, Kyle. Karma's a bitch.
Yep, that's exactly. Hashtag karma's a bitch.
Is that our episode title?
I don't know. We have a lot by this point, but yeah, because
he rang the bell, dude. Case closed.
No, and I like the animals' viewpoints too. Like Sandor's just trying to get to her,
right?
And that's always been, and I think it's been, or we have questioned whether Sandor is actually in love with her, or if he's like the protector of her. But I think this shows that he is actually like the father figure protector of her.
I mean, he calls himself her father.
Well, yeah, I know. But I mean, issues before, because I don't remember where they were at, but somebody questioned his loyalty or how he loved her. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And even the Billy Goat took their side, and not Kyle's side.
Yep.
Dude, yeah, I mean, Martin, I'm glad you brought it up, actually, because it's obviously very confusing what's going on with Kyle, right? You know, like, you know, whether he actually thinks he's doing the right thing, you know, because he's talking a lot about in this issue, like, oh, I've done some bad stuff. You know, I thought that, like, working with the animal militia, that would be the thing. But, like, turns out they're just as bad as humans, you know, and anybody with power is just looking out for themselves. But meanwhile, you know, I trust these people in power, like in the Walled City, like that's who I should give you to, rip you away from Sandor. You know, like I'm not sure why and how he turned away from like the animals in his party, or whether he was always kind of like leaning that way, you know. But we first, I guess, saw him betray them when they were still on the farm, right? Like,
yeah.
Like
yeah,
he sounded the alarm when they snuck out.
Yeah, right.
So this is just a continuation of that. It's like, I got to get Jesse away from this or something.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't
think he's doing the right thing, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think his motivation is wrong, right? Like, he's a human and he's trying to save this human girl. So I don't think his motivations are wrong. It's just, I don't think he has the forethought to actually say, like, if I go to this place, it could not be the best. Like, maybe I am in the best situation.
Yeah,
I don't think he can think that far.
He's for the right here and now, and not the whole picture.
Right.
Or for the long term.
Right. And I think that's one thing that Sandor is really good at, is kind of gauging the situation as a whole and understanding what is best for Jesse. Right. Whereas Kyle maybe sees going to the Wolf City as the best thing for him. And if it's the best thing for him and he's a human and she's also human, then it might be the best thing for her as well. And obviously it's not.
It's almost like Kyle's the millennial and needs the instant gratification type stuff. Like, yeah, it needs to happen now, as to where, like, Sandor is like the older generation. That, because ever since this happened, Sandor's been looking at it as to what happens to Jesse once I'm not here. She needs to learn this. She needs to learn math. You know, she needs to learn that, this or that, going forward. Because one day he's not going to be there. And he said that here, that she needs to learn how to take control in her own hands.
And it's kind of revelatory when she wakes up from being drugged, when they have the exchange, she's like, you're not my father. And he's like, well, okay, I'm not your father, but maybe I can be your brother, right?
Right.
So, like, I mean, I've got two brothers, and, you know, like, the relationship that my brothers and I have is very different from what my dad and I have. And, you know, I feel like with my dad being older and having experienced more, he would maybe have a more informed say in the things that I would do, right? Like, my brothers wouldn't be like, don't touch the stove because it's hot, but my dad would, right?
Right.
And that's what the difference is kind of in the relationship. We're like, this might seem okay, but Kyle doesn't have the experience in dealing with other people and animals that Sandor does. Mm-hmm. And so Sandor can make a more informed decision on what they should be doing because of that.
So,
and the difference too is Kyle also wants to look after himself. Right. Whereas Sandor doesn't care, right? Because being the father figure, his sole motivation is to protect Jesse.
Right.
Whereas Kyle's motivation is to protect himself and whoever is like him, which happens to be Jesse.
Right. So would it be Lucas or Julian that would ether you?
I don't know, man. That's tough. That's tough.
No, yeah, I'm totally with your assessment on that part, Lou. And is Kyle really dead?
Yeah, I don't think he's dead.
They just left him out there to die?
Yeah, yeah.
Until the animals get to him?
Well, and I think that's how the story's going to proceed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the animals will eventually catch up, and they're going to meet Kyle, and Kyle will be like, hey, she's in the Wall City.
Yeah. Help me, I'm dying. But should they help her? Help him?
I don't think so. But I wouldn't put it past Sandor to actually help him, though.
Yeah.
Because, again, Sandor's the wise one, right? So, like, yeah, Kyle effed up, but, you know, if he can get Jesse back, then whatever.
Yep. Agreed.
All right, let's rate this one up then. I'll go first on this one. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5. Animosity is just a gorgeous book in every respect. The writing, the dialogue, the characterization, the art, the coloring, the lettering, everything is just, it's a beautiful book, and it's a joy to read every time I read it. Because, you know, like we've had the discussion, it's very much has a lot of things to say about the world that we live in a different context that allows us to kind of be separate from it. And as a result, I think it kind of surpasses just being a comic book. Like, this to me, Animosity is like a work of literature. And that's why I really appreciate it.
I'm going to go 4.5 out of 5 for the same reasons, basically. I don't want to give it the straight 5 because I keep wanting it to get better and better, even though it's a game right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go the full 5 out of 5. Martin, you really sold me on it. And I can't argue with any of that, you know, like, you know, the one thing I think I will say is that kind of I found myself in the previous arc kind of being like, whoa, where's this going? And in you know, to kind of pull it back to your comments about The Walking Dead, you know, I've read a lot of The Walking Dead comic, and, you know, while it's kind of gripping in places, I feel like it's kind of a meandering story. And I, you know, reading the last arc, I really had questions about where it was headed. And then reading this issue, it was revelatory to me. And I was like, oh, crap, you know, like this actually like goes in exactly the direction that I want, you know, and it's kind of getting more into the philosophical space and less into the kind of like plot, you know, action driven space. So like I'm really happy that they're going this direction. So I'll go 5 out of 5.
Good point. Let's see. What do we have for next week? Since we already have the books.
Brilliant Trash.
Yep,
right?
Got it. And Pestilence. Next week, we will be discussing Brilliant Trash number 6 and Pestilence volume 2 number 1. What's the subtitle of Pestilence? I can't remember that.
SOS or something?
Yeah, what's it stand for? Something Satan.
Son of Satan or Solace of Satan?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Looking forward to reading that, seeing how the apocalypse, the zombie apocalypse has changed the world of Pestilence. I love that book. So we'll be talking about those two books next week. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find Travis at The Great Magnet. Ronnie is at Rumbar316. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. Thanks for listening. Shock the world.